Hey everyone, and welcome to tonight's social stream. We've got another one going, and I'm really glad to be doing these, so thank you for joining me. I think maybe we should start out with some of the most kind of comical news that I've seen in a while, because we don't really get that very often now. Everything's just so kind of serious and tense because, in a very real sense, it seems like things are falling apart, and now culture is just, like, what culture, right? But I did notice that the ACLU decided to kind of pay homage of sorts to Ruth Bader Ginsburg today, and well, I'm gonna have to show you the tweet in which they did so. I don't usually spend a lot of time sharing tweets for obvious reasons, like I don't want to push Twitter, but this was something else, all right? So I'm gonna go ahead and turn it on. So there you can see, let me lean over, it says, "With Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg's death, we lost a champion for abortion and gender equality, and on the anniversary of her death, the fight to protect abortion access is more urgent than ever." And then you can see the quote by Ruth Bader Ginsburg that they think is just so wonderful that they have to, you know, quote her. And you can see that they actually censored out the words relating to woman and her. Like, the decision whether or not to bear a child is central to a person's life. They couldn't say a woman's life, of course, because that would be transphobic. This is literally where we are. And then it's supposed to be to her well-being and dignity, but they can't afford the person enough dignity to refer to her as a woman, as a she, because it's only women who can bear children, and saying that most basic truth is too much for the ACLU, an agency that at least at one time did actually care enough about truth to defend free speech, even speech that they didn't agree with. Like, I know they've been a leftist organization for a long time, I know they've been anti-Christian for a long time, but they did actually defend things like free speech all the way to the Supreme Court, even for like Klan members and stuff that they profoundly disagreed with, and that was some of the like most noble stuff they've ever done. And now they have like no respect for speech, for truth, none of it. And no respect even for the person that they're quoting as if she's some great liberator. Like, I don't like Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I don't think that, you know, promoting abortion is some grandiose civil rights whatever. I don't believe any of that. However, imagine that you did think any of that, and then you were like, well, you know, let's go ahead and fix this person's quote. You know, because it just doesn't align with my narrative and what I want enough. That's where they are. And, you know, why is Ruth Bader Ginsburg so important to the collective left anyway? That's an important question, because it's not just about abortion. Granted, she was one of the sort of chief promoters of pretty much endless, unlimited abortion, you know, at least by the end. But it's not just that, right? It's the fact that she's a woman. She talked at length about the fact that she was a woman and about her fight against, you know, men, basically, in the workplace at different points, right? That was her whole shtick. I watched like an hour and a half interview with her near the end of her life where she was basically, and I did this for you guys because I was looking for specific, you know, clips for a video. But in any case, that was it. That was like her entire thing. She was like, well, when will there be enough women on the Supreme Court? And she was like, well, when there's nine, you know, that was her. And so a really chief identifier of why she was important to the left wasn't because she's a person. It was because she's a woman. And I've always found that particular way of thinking particularly abhorrent. Like, I don't understand it. I can't relate to it. I think it's wrong. But in any case, it's so ironic that they think that, you know, A, she's important because she's a woman, but also we're going to censor out anything that indicates that, you know, that women exist in any sort of differential way to men. And by the way, in that particular quote, in the actual quote, it ended with, "When government controls that decision for her," that is abortion, "she's being treated as less than a fully adult human responsible for her own choices," unquote. Now, so in other words, she was insinuating that women were being infantilized by a government that places any restrictions whatsoever upon abortion. And that's not true. It's actually about the rights and dignity of the child, of course. But in any case, the truth is that right now, women are being erased, as shown in that particular quote, right? Because the feminism of her time has been kind of warped into this sort of fear of transphobia in our time, such that women cannot possibly exist, right? Because women are replaceable by men, and as such, you know, you can have men inside of women's bathrooms, or you can have a man beating up a woman in a wrestling match, and nobody's allowed to say anything about it because women and men are completely replaceable and completely the same, essentially. It's simply about who says they are something. And it just kind of amused me because it's kind of like a left eats its own thing. If you align with that side, eventually they'll turn on you. And they turned on her, in a sense, even while trying to honor her after her death. And that's kind of what you get when you go that route, I suppose you could say. All right, let me get a drink and then we will move on. All right, so I did notice in recent days that the White House has basically announced that they want to give dishonorable discharges to any members of the armed forces who refuse vaccines, who refuse to accept the COVID-19 forced vaccinations. And I think that's just so profoundly evil. Because, I mean, by giving someone a dishonorable discharge, you're ruining their life, right? It's like essentially having, you know, a felony conviction. It might as well be when it comes to getting a job or getting benefits and so on. It really does haunt a person, and it was supposed to. That was the whole point, as a kind of a way to force compliance amongst military men. And doing so with this vaccine seems so incredibly evil. It is. And it was Mark Green, who's a Republican, proposed an amendment this week to the National Defense Authorization Act that would have prohibited any discharge other than honorable for troops who refuse these vaccines. So basically they could be kicked out, but they'd be kicked out with an honorable discharge. And that's what he was trying to make sure happened to prevent the Biden administration from doing this. Instead, the White House came out and specifically said, no, we're not gonna do that. The White House said that it would, and I quote, detract from readiness and limit a commander's options for enforcing good order and discipline when a service member fails to obey a lawful order to receive a vaccination, unquote. So, in other words, they're basically confirming that they're going to try and destroy the lives of these military men who fear the vaccine, and who are otherwise willing to lose their jobs because they're afraid enough. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're talking about a person who has gone ahead and made the decision, you know, this is my line. This is where I kind of draw my line in the sand, so to speak. And I don't care if I lose my job, but I'm, you know, concerned, for example, that if I get this, I'm risking a certain degree of side effect that will prevent me from perhaps going back to my family, or prevent me from being able to, you know, feed my family, provide for my family, and all of that. That's an incredibly difficult decision to make for anyone, including people in the private sector. But I'd say perhaps especially for people in the military who've, you know, the military controls your life entirely, controls everything about the way that you live, and in a real sense kind of controls your sense of identity as well. So that's a huge move. And then you're talking about these people being forced to take a dishonorable discharge, or being dishonorably discharged for making that decision. And it's absolutely evil. It prevents them from making a proper transition into real work, right? Because when you've got a dishonorable discharge, it's very difficult for you to get a job thereafter. Like I said, it follows you. For people in other countries, you may not realize it because they don't do it the same way. But yeah, here, I mean, when you go to get a job, the dishonorable discharge thing is a huge deal, and it'll prevent you from getting employment a lot of places. So yeah, Elgato Felix says, it sounds like the US military has been massively infiltrated. Yes, it has been massively infiltrated, and we've seen that. We saw that with the general going on about basically white people and how they're the problem. We've seen that in the efforts to stamp out extremism, which they define as anybody who supported Trump. That kind of stuff. We've seen that happen. In fact, if you remember when the Biden administration was, what's the word, kind of instituted by the National Guard, they went through the social media profiles of those National Guardsmen to look for any support for President Trump, to look for any support of conservatism, to look for anything that would point to the Founding Fathers, to look for anything that would be perceivably anti-big government. You know, because I thought these were like basically American ideals. personally. Like, I thought that looking upon the American founders as being decent and good, and, you know, like the quotes by Thomas Jefferson, for example, as being kind of intrinsically American, I would expect. And I would expect that you'd have people, you know, service members, for example, be more likely to be more patriotic, hence why they signed up, perhaps, more likely to quote from such sources. But instead, you had an active effort by the Biden administration to eliminate those people amongst the soldiers that they were using to try and kind of bring in a new regime. That's where we are. And yeah, white rage, exactly. That's what they were talking about with the General Milley was talking about. That was his focus. And they keep looking for so-called extremism amongst the troops, and then defining extremism as basically anything that isn't left-wing. And they keep redefining extremism now. They just kind of throw it around as a word. But they keep redefining it so that it's basically anything that isn't outright left-wing is extreme. And it's like, at this point, we're kind of suddenly getting to the point where a lot of conservatives, or, you know, like self-proclaimed conservatives at this point, are getting to the point where they're like, okay, there's a real problem in our colleges, you know, there's a real problem in our college and university system. And at the same time, it's like, that's so far behind the times now, because, like, yeah, the university system, the colleges, they're gone. Now we have a problem in our military and our law enforcement. Like the conservatives just caught up with the university system, and we're looking over at what's going on in the military and what's going on in law enforcement, and the attempts to weed out anyone who actually cares about the oaths that they took, for example. That's where we really are, and it seems like very few people are paying attention. Iden Town says, can they refuse the jab but get a free sex change before they leave the military? Most likely, yes. As, in fact, if they get the free sex change, I imagine they probably wouldn't be thrown out, because the military wouldn't want to be perceivably discriminatory. And, you know, that would be an area of concern. Oh, and by the way, I don't know if you guys are keeping up, because we were talking a couple of weeks ago about what the next variant would be called, and, you know, after the Delta strain, and whether it would be, you know, Foxtrot or something. But in fact, that there is a new variant. I know you're shocked. You must be, because how could any of us have possibly guessed? And they're calling it R1, or some places R.1. It apparently is a dangerous mutation, an especially dangerous mutation I've seen. It has been seen or located in 49 states, according to, like, Newsweek, I saw. So you should be especially afraid now, and do everything that they've been telling you to do, and comply completely, because otherwise, the new strain will get you. And this wasn't predictable. This was not predictable at all, right? No, seriously, they're going with this. It's like, it doesn't matter how many people just sort of wake up and go, okay, well, I'm kind of tired of this. Like, even the most compliant, right, who started to comply way back in, like, you know, March of 2020, those people are like, okay, we're done, you know, we don't even care anymore, we just want to live, you know, we'll risk it. It doesn't seem to matter. It's like, they're just going to keep coming up with different variants as they need to kind of maintain maximum control. And that's exactly where we are. And it's incredibly predictable at this point, but they don't care. It's all about fear. And there are some people who seem absolutely afraid, and it's really odd to me. Like, I was in a store recently, and an employee was helping me find something, and I didn't have a mask on, and he did. And he came within, like, 3 feet with this mask on to point at something, and then he hurried back, and this guy was, like somewhere between 25 and 30. And I'm like, and I'm watching him as he maintains his 6 feet distance with his mask as this, like, 25-ish year old man. And I'm thinking, like, seriously, you're supposed to be a guy, you know, like, the kind of, like, the foundation of our society, the people that we lean on so as not to be afraid, in the most literal sense, kind of a source of strength for the community. And he's there maintaining the 6 feet distance with the mask on as if he's actually, you know, afraid. And it's one thing if an employee has a mask on because he's forced, you know, by his employer. I get it. But when he hurries back, like, you know, he's actually afraid, and he's he's a man, right? I just find it a little bit jarring. Like, what is wrong with you? You know, like in what sort of household were you raised to act like this? Okay, anyway, sorry, I just, you know, I was kind of reminded of that because it's just kind of jarring that some people are actually still actively afraid. Anyway, let's move on. So, there's a university in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It's called Point Park University. And they have a new rule. It's, or as they call it, a misgendering, pronoun misuse, and dead naming policy. Yeah, really. They sent out an email to all of their students announcing this new policy on misgendering and dead naming, which hopefully you guys don't even know what this means. Hopefully, because if you've, you know, lived a reasonable life and haven't spent too much time on social media and on the internet, you don't even know what these terms mean. But dead naming is when you use a person's actual name. You know, like before Bruce became Caitlin, if you referred to Bruce Jenner as Bruce Jenner, you're dead naming the person. And misgendering is when you use a person's actual gender, you know, the way that he actually is and grew up and so on. Okay, so now that we're all square, so to speak, this is a university. So you have to think about this. This is a university that is actually seeking to penalize truth. You see, the university actually said that they were going to, you know, find ways to be punitive, to take action, as they use the term, against anybody who does these things, who misgenders, who uses the wrong pronouns, which is actually the right pronouns, and who uses a person's former name. In fact, it went on even further than that. And I'm going to just quote this, because this is insane. This quote, "While the university recognizes the aspect of intent versus impact, we must recognize that regardless of the intent, if an individual is impacted in a harmful way, action could be taken if a complaint is filed," unquote. Now, all right, so if you use the wrong pronoun for somebody, let's just go with their kind of ridiculous vernacular there. If you use the wrong pronoun for someone, even if you didn't intend to offend the person, it doesn't matter. If the person is impacted, in other words, if their feelings are hurt, then you have to face some kind of consequence. But notice the thing that doesn't matter, that's the truth. The truth doesn't matter at all, apparently. And it's like, it wouldn't bother me so much if it weren't a university. And it's like, it's the entire point. It's the whole point, that's it, is to teach truth as best as we know it. And you're actively requiring that your students speak a lie instead of truth. And there was this supposedly conservative group on campus called Campus Reform, and the correspondent from that particular university told Fox News that the school's policies, and I quote, "go against many students' belief systems, especially conservative students," unquote. Really? Belief systems? And I don't mean to be kind of pedantic here, but it's not my belief that a man is a man. It's not my belief that a woman is a woman and that the appropriate pronouns are she and her for a woman and will always be. That's not a belief system. It's not about religion. It's not about engaging in delusion. It's not about accepting someone else's belief system. And really, somebody who's saying, you know, if I was a girl and, you know, I was telling people to call me a guy, I'd be asking them to participate in a delusional belief system. But the truth isn't a belief system. It's simply the truth. It simply is. And it's like, for the conservative group to act like this is simply about belief is incredibly demeaning and kind of betrays the entire point, because it's not about a competing religious system. Like, you know, sure, there is an importance of truth inside of Christianity, I guess, but it's like, if someone said that they had three arms and they didn't, you don't need to look at the book of Genesis to see how people were made, to look for a description of man, for example. That's ridiculous. But instead, that's where we are. We're at a point where the university system wants people to participate in a lie and will try and force them to do so. And simultaneously, the alleged conservatives bicker about belief systems as if the truth has no import whatsoever. And it's like, okay, you would think that a decent conservative who was battling this issue would care more about the ability to speak freely than anything else. You would think that that would be the priority, to speak truth, that was the important part, that not to be compelled to speak would be the important part, but instead that isn't there at all. Anyway, Tom says, liberals have counter-arguments to religion, need to come at them with better strategies. Well, yeah, and I think that the truth, like simply what is a much better response than that's against my belief system. As if it's simply my belief that a man is a man. It's actually really kind of demeaning and betrays the entire point. You could argue that calling it a belief system like that is actually sort of an indulgence in their argument entirely, because their argument is, well, gender is just a social construct, which means, well, gender is just a belief system. It's just what you identify as. It's just the way that you feel, right? And the way that you feel might be called a belief system, of course. And so when you engage in that kind of half-hearted defense, you really do betray your own side, you betray your own point, and you betray the truth. It's like, if you're going to speak truth, then do so boldly. Joseph DeTellis says, conservative college students, especially those who want to be leaders, need to be seriously educated in actual conservative principles. Well, yeah, and the trouble is that there's nobody teaching them that. Like, all the modern conservative groups and organizations at this point that teach young people do so on areas of what you might call fiscal conservatism, and frankly, it's the culture war that matters. It's topics like this that matter, the gender war, you might say, that matters. It's the truth that matters. And these are the things that have been thrown by the wayside in lieu of talking about tax rates. That's what modern conservatism has become, and that's why I've increasingly identified myself as a traditionalist as opposed to a conservative, so as not to get kind of confused with those types of people. Scribbler Squire says, the Calgary University is kicking out all students that refuse to get jabbed, and all this mess is insane. It's not just insane, it's evil and it is wrong, and it shouldn't be happening. Nobody should be compelled to accept something inside of their body that they don't want, inside of their blood, you might say. Nobody should be forced and even quizzed about their medical status. It's evil. I can't imagine this sort of narcissism that it would take for me as an individual to say to somebody else, you're required, I will force you to take this substance into your body, you know, I will it, so to speak, and you have no redress, no ability to fight against me, because, you know, kind of like my will be done, so to speak. I can't imagine, because it's like I see another person's human body as his own. As, you know, he is autonomous of me. But increasingly, the state, the government, and in many cases the university system no longer sees that. They are acting as if they see these people as property in this really perverse sort of abuser-victim relationship where they're metering or using the threat of basically poverty against people. And I mean that both in the university system and in the private sector. You see it, you might see it more clearly in the private sector because you think of a person who's losing his job and therefore he's losing his paycheck. But you look at a person who's in the university system, he's losing the amount of years that he's placed into, you know, getting whatever degree he's trying to get, the money that he's placed into trying to get that degree, and potentially the future employment thereof. So he's kind of sacrificing almost his future, or his future is being dangled before him, offered if only he'll take this thing that he doesn't want to take, that the other person, the university, is trying to force. A great risk to him when compared with the virus that it's supposed to protect against. Lawrence D says, how did Soy Boy Trudeau win another election when everybody hates him? All right, sure, we'll talk about the Canadian election. So yes, Trudeau did win again, which it wasn't really that hard to call, to be honest. And that's because I can't imagine that most people would even show up to vote. In a system where voters are so disillusioned because the counterparty, the Conservatives, are useless. It's like when you've got two parties, and both parties, and I know this is really easy for Americans to actually, you know, picture, but both parties don't care about the rights of the citizens. Both parties have been monumental in pushing forth tyranny. Both parties have been trying to force things like, you know, vaccinations on people who don't want them. Both parties have been pushing for the masks. Then what's the surprise when people are completely disillusioned and don't even show up to vote? And that's something that I actually dealt with when I was involved in English politics, like British politics, if you prefer the term. It was the same thing, because over in England, you had the sort of same two-party system, and yes, you technically had the third party, or third parties. But if you were to vote for those, you'd have a lot of people who were like, well, what's the point? You know, am I just splitting the Conservative vote? It was like, well, yes, but if the Conservatives are useless, who cares? You know, there was that kind of thing. And then there was, well, if I vote for this party that's not going to win anyway, then what's the point? And that's kind of what you've got over in Canada. As far as I can tell, you've got one party, basically, that is even halfway decent, and that would be the PPC, or the People's Party of Canada, which, by the way, has an atrocious name. I mean, it sounds like a communist group, that they need a different name, the People's Party of Canada. And I used to know a guy who was a candidate for the PPC, and he was like, well, we keep getting these calls all the time by people who are wanting to know if we're communists or socialists. It's like, well, look at your name. I'd wonder, you know, if I didn't know anything about you. It's a valid concern. But seriously, to the Canadians, I'm sorry that you live in that. I know what it's like, because when I was in England, it was very much the same situation, where you've got these basically two very dominant parties who have always had power. Nobody believes that anybody else could possibly have power. And as a result of that lack of belief, nobody else ever does have power. And this is just kind of ignoring any potential for voter fraud, too, you know, because I'm sure that takes place at different scales. But really, when you look at the current system over there, it's not surprising that you had a Trudeau victory when you have disillusioned voters on the other side. People just aren't going to show up. Of course, you know, then you have to ask yourself, like, how did Biden win in this country when, you know, he couldn't get more than 24 people to show up at his speeches? But, you know, that's a different topic altogether. That's just what it's like when you have the most popular president ever in history. Okay, anyway. I'm just kind of scrolling through your comments before moving on. True conservatives don't vote. As the name implies, they don't want any change. No, that's not what conservatism means. To be a conservative, we're supposed to be that you want to conserve the values of the society that formed the society. Not that you want to just kind of go with whatever the current status quo is and never have any change. No, it was, you were supposed to care about in this country at least, it was the God-given rights that were written into the Constitution, for example. It is the Western and actually the Christian values that sort of undergirded American society. It was an adherence to those values that meant conservatism. It's not simply, oh, we have gay marriage today and therefore we're okay with it because it is the way that things are, and therefore we'll defend that even though it wasn't one of our values, you know, before the Supreme Court ruled that it was unconstitutional for no reason, even though, you know, all of that. That doesn't make any sense. No, that's not what conservatism is. It never was. Okay. All right, so let's go ahead and move on, actually, because I've got a lot of things that I'd like to talk about this week. It's actually been a pretty active week, I would say. And almost, actually, since we're talking about England, almost a quarter of COVID patients in England are being treated for something else. And on top of that, half of daily hospitalizations in England test positive for COVID after having been entered for something else. So in other words, the grandmother breaks her leg falling down the stairs, and then goes to the hospital and gets a test for COVID because they test everyone for COVID. And then they find out, well, she's positive, and therefore they add her name to the, or her number to this statistic that says, oh, look at how many, you know, positive infections we have. Regardless of whether or not that was the reason that she went there, whether or not it was a problem, regardless of any of that, it's simply used as an instrument of fear and control and terror. That's what it is. And that's where we are. So I just thought I'd kind of throw that out because it's like an example of the way that statistics are being used to manipulate people. Like you hear about hospitalization rates among people who are positive, and it's like, okay, but is that why they're there? Or are they there for something else and they happen to have it and they didn't even know that they had it? Well, that wasn't, certainly it wasn't severe enough to show up at the hospital. And it's an important data point that nobody's going to point out, you know, at least not from an official source. Richard Tarr says, grandma caught COVID at the hospital. Well, yeah, that too. I mean, whenever you go now, there are people who are, you get tested for this thing no matter what. And it's kind of weird because it's like in any flu season, for example, if you went in because you fell, that they wouldn't test you for the flu and they wouldn't test you for other conditions that you've been vaccinated against. They wouldn't, you know, I mean, it just wouldn't happen. But for some reason, in the most recent case, in the, you know, COVID-19 case, we treat it as if it is worse than the plague. Or quite literally, we treat it like it's worse than the plague. And completely different. It amuses me. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about Australia. I think we ought to. Because those who are in Australia are suffering through some of the worst tyranny in the sort of modern Western world, for sure. And it's a country that we typically associate with being free and developed, being sort of democratic to some degree. And instead, you see an absolute state of tyranny. Melbourne especially, of course, they've experienced 200 days of lockdowns at this point. That's the highest in the world. Of course, lockdown wasn't a word that any of us would have used just a couple of years ago, right? Lockdown wasn't a word that we would have used to identify anything other than someone who was in a prison. It's not how we would describe how a politician would lock up a free people, because they were supposed to be free. We at least pretended like they were free, you know? We at least gave it the sort of lip service. And you do see now a lot of protests going on over in Australia. And when you watch these videos of the protests, which include, you know, people basically fighting the police at this point, I think it's important to remember just how kind of brave that is. Because these are people who aren't legally allowed to protest. So just them being out there in the first place is an act of bravery at a time when they know that, you know, they can be arrested, they can be charged, they can be thrown away, they can be separated from their families, all of this. And in so doing, of course, whenever you get sent to jail, you end up losing your job and so on. There's tremendous life disruption. They're risking all of that because they want to be free. And so when you watch a video and you see a protest that's happening over in Australia, I think it's important to remember just how much sort of weight is on their shoulders and the fact that they're willing to do that. And that's, well, it's pretty amazing. In any case, they've been met with tear gas and rubber bullets, and a lot of them have been injured. But interestingly, I've noticed in the sort of, I don't know, the media's narrative shift, they've been labeled as far right. That's the new thing. That these people who want to be free, these people who are organizing protests or who are protesting, they're being labeled as either far right or extremist. And that's kind of odd. I didn't see that coming. Maybe I should have. But I didn't think they were just going to get labeled, oh, well, they're just kind of far righters. In any case, it's like, no, they're people who just want to be free. If you consider that to be far right, then okay, I guess that's on you. Heck, maybe that is how we should define far right at this point. I don't know. But in any case, that's what they're doing. And most recently, the thing that's kind of kicked up the media is a protest that ended up taking place at a place called the Shrine of Remembrance, which is a war memorial. Now, the entire scenario was orchestrated. You see, what I mean by that is that the protesters apparently were not going to that location at all. It was not on the itinerary, so to speak. Instead, the police herded and corralled the protesters toward the memorial. And then, after, you know, they had their kind of standoff at the memorial, you then had politicians on both sides condemning the protesters, saying that the protesters should be ashamed of themselves for protesting on such sacred ground, you know, because it's the war memorial in Seoul. And all. That's the way they've sort of manipulated the narrative so that people can kind of condemn and turn against the people who are protesting for their freedoms. In fact, there's this one guy, Josh Frydenberg, who's the deputy leader of the Liberal Party over there. And I got this quote from him that I had to kind of read several times because I was like, he can't really have said that because he doesn't realize the irony that's in his statement. But it said this, quote, "It is quite disgusting to see those protesters at the shrine, given that it's there to commemorate lives of people that have been lost defending our civil liberties, defending the rule of law, only to be set upon by those determined to break the rules," unquote. Okay. So, the protesters are protesting at a place where the people have been, you know, were killed or died defending civil liberties. And he doesn't see that at all. And I'm just like sitting here going, is he gonna get it? And no, he doesn't get it. But it's like, these protesters, I can't think of a more appropriate place. Like, if you accept that the people who died, who are being commemorated by the war memorial, did in fact die defending civil liberties, then what are those civil liberties that are so worth defending that you should give out, that you should give your life, that it's a noble ideal to do so? I mean, seriously, is it the right to leave your home? Because that's a right that's been infringed upon in Australia. Is it the right to speak freely? Because that's been infringed upon. Is it the right to have a free press? Because that's been infringed upon. Like, what rights are there? What civil liberties are there that, according to this politician, is of value when the military soldiers gave their lives defending it, but is of no value when the protesters against the lockdowns, you know, speak up, so to speak? You see that the kind of weird dichotomy there, where it's like, oh, we care about civil liberties that those in, you know, World War One and so on gave their lives to defend, because that's apparently what the war memorial was originally for, and now is, you know, of all wars. But in any case, you know, if we accept the narrative that they died defending our civil liberties, and then you have to say, well, which civil liberties? Which ones matter? Which ones are worthy of dying for? Because in a time when, if you accept the narrative that there is a virus that is super deadly, and you're accepting the idea that you're risking your life, and sort of giving up all of your rights to not risk your life, you could say, because that's what the kind of mantra of the lockdowns, right? It's, we're not going to risk our lives in order to live. That's why I always kind of find it kind of odd, right? We're not going to live, we're just going to hide in our homes forever because that's safer, and we'll sacrifice all of our rights and all of our liberties for safety. That's literally what's been happening. And so then you look at this politician who's like, well, how dare they go to this memorial? It's like, I can't think of a more appropriate place to remind people that their civil liberties matter and that some people perhaps died for them, that some people actually cared about their civil liberties, you know? And maybe those people protesting care about the civil liberties too. And it wasn't their idea to go to the memorial, but even if it had been, I think it would have been an absolute good. And I think it stands to reason that people ought to, you know, speak up and care. That people, yeah, it's just kind of, it's shocking to me. I end up kind of going around in circles anyway. Alright, I was just kind of looking over your chats, but it looks like you're pretty much in agreement here. It's just, and over in Australia, I know that the protests have increased. I should say the kind of opposition to them has increased to the degree that there's military presence now. We're starting to see videos of the men in camo coming out and arresting people, and also military helicopters being used at the same time. And these are against civilians who are protesting for the civil liberties that politicians care so much about at election time. Yeah, but no other time. It's the rest of the time now. And at the same time, the police have been going around and knocking on doors, literally going door to door, asking people about these protests and whether they know that they're happening, and asking them if they know that they're illegal. You know, you can't go, you know, here's your forewarning. And by the way, you can't, you know, you can't actually leave within like a certain distance from your home. But we care so much about the civil liberties, so you know, keep voting for us. It's unbelievable. Jessica Harper says, "Stand with your construction workers every day." Well, yeah, in Australia, for those who don't know, the construction workers have been amongst those who have been protesting against things like the vaccine mandate required for them to work. And it's crazy that you've got these basically countries that are shutting themselves down, or at least potentially shutting themselves down, by requiring that infrastructure workers, I'm not going to say essential workers, but workers for infrastructure, get these shots. And similarly with the medical sector, right? You're requiring that people in the medical sector get the shots or leave, you know, at a time when supposedly hospitals are overflowing. Oh, and by the way, since we're on the topic, Black Lives Matter is a little concerned with this whole vaccine mandate thing, which is incredibly amusing. See, over in New York, right, a lot of the restaurants now are mandating that you show proof of your vaccine status, like some kind of woke badge or something, woke ID, in order to be allowed in. And that's an actual requirement of the place at this point. So you've got all these different restaurants that are asking for your medical record. I'm just going to call it like it is, as opposed to how they call it. And you've got the Black Lives Matter group up there that is absolutely outraged. So you've got Hank Newsom is the co-founder of the Black Lives Matter Greater New York chapter, all right? And he's been screaming and arranging these protests outside of these restaurants because ultimately he's like, well, more than 70% of Black Americans between 18 and 44 in New York City haven't gotten the vaccine. And so what he's looking at it as well, this is obviously discriminatory against Black people, is basically an effort to keep Black people out of, say, restaurants and movie theaters and sporting events and so on, which is, you know, basically the list of things that you can't do if you are not vaccinated, according to the edict of the area. All right, I won't call it a law because I won't justify it like that. But in any case, that's the way it is. And so they're accusing these restaurants of using the vaccine passport, vaccine mandate, as basically a way to create white spaces, a term that Hank Newsom over there at the Black Lives Matter chapter actually used. And that's, it's kind of funny in a way, you know, because it's like, well, you know, the left said that that requiring an ID was racist for voting, right? It was really racist to require an ID for someone to go up and vote to change the country in some way. And that was honestly absolutely ridiculous. It was. And yet now, the same people who said, you know, that we can't allow an ID, now are requiring a certain type of ID to go into any sort of restaurant, to go into any sporting event, to go into a movie theater, after saying that Black Americans weren't capable. And it's not that Black Americans aren't capable, by the way. Black Americans increasingly aren't willing to get the vaccine, A, because they have Black churches, which are more likely to speak up against such things, and also because they have an inherent distrust of, you can call it the man if you like, but, you know, of white society and of white medicine, especially as it comes to forced things, because they remember things like the Tuskegee experiments and so on. And it's fine. I mean, I don't think that I have the right to tell somebody else, regardless of race, what he should do and what decisions he should make medically about his own body. I don't. So I'm fine with them, you know, making whatever decisions that they want in that regard. But I will say that I think it's amusing. This is kind of like another case of the left eating its own. And it's incredibly ironic at the same time, you know, that you've got the left simultaneously, like two sides of the same mouth saying, no, we still can't have ID to vote, but yes, you have to have this ID to get into a restaurant. This other ID, the woke ID, the ID that tells us whether or not you're compliant with the system. Because I talked about this, I think, last week, but I think it's important enough to repeat that that's what your vaccine passport is, if you're going to call it a passport. That's what it is. It's proof of compliance. And that's what they're seeking, a divided society. And you can either show that you comply and show that you approve of the elitist powers that be or not. And that's what your vaccine passport, your proof of vaccination is. It's your ID to say, yes, I comply, I submit. I submit to your authority. To your authority, even over my own body, even over my autonomy, I give it up to the state. Yeah, okay. There's a lot of comments in here that I actually agree with, but I can't repeat. So I'm just going to go ahead and tell you, yeah, I'm on your side with this stuff. I get you, but there's a lot of stuff that I can't repeat at the moment. All right. Let's move on for a bit, because I'm tired of talking about the shot anyway. Let me just get a drink, and then we will move on. So, at a Homeland Security Committee hearing today, it was September 23rd, 2021, it sort of started getting talked about. There's a human infrastructure bill that's on the table that the president is pushing, or the president's handlers are pushing. Now, this bill, the human infrastructure bill, would allow illegal aliens to get $300 a month in welfare per child by simply obtaining a tax ID number once they're here. That's $300 a month per child. So let's just say, you know, the family has four kids. That's $1,200 a month. That's more than you'd get working in Mexico. Why stay in Mexico? And seriously, I'm not even joking. Like, why stay in Mexico at that point? See, they're creating a dynamic where it's like, there's no point not coming. They're inviting people and paying them to come. It's a bribe of sorts. It's a bribe to people who are coming to the country illegally, not even legally. You know, I think that our immigration system overall needs to be reformed, you know, if you want to really get down to it. But you're talking about people who came here illegally, violated American law, and then by being here illegally and many of them not paying into taxes at all, because for many it's simply, why would I? They become a drain on resources because, yes, a small percentage of your taxes is used for something decent. Small, but it's there. In any case, and then they, you know, go into, say, emergency rooms and use resources there, and then your taxes are used to reimburse the hospitals for illegal immigrant costs. That happens. And now you're talking about an actual welfare specific to illegals that an American citizen couldn't get. I mean, how is that right? I mean, you know, I really do try to figure out exactly how this would work, exactly, you know, where this sort of moral understanding is. Because I know most people try to be moral in some way. They justify their decisions in different ways. But my gosh, you're talking about giving, you know, $300 a month, every month, per child, to someone who came here illegally, and not to do the same thing to the American citizen who paid for that check. Because that's who it's coming from. When we're talking about money coming from the government, it's not mystery money, it's money that Americans have paid for. It's American money, it's money that Americans have worked for. You know? That's actually what the case is. And it really is about basically bringing in as many people as possible from south of the border in order to, in many ways, replace the American worker, sure, but perhaps more importantly, from the eyes of the elitists, to replace the American voter. And that's what it's all about. And, you know, I think when you say to replace the American worker is why Republicans do it. And I'm not talking about conservatives. I'm talking about people who are actually Republican, but not really conservative. And there are a lot of those, of course, you know. But the pro-immigration or pro-south of the border immigration Republicans try and bring them here for that reason, as workers, cheap labor, that kind of thing. But then the Democrats try and bring them here for a different reason, and that is because they're going to vote in a certain way. I mean, they're just kind of using these people as pawns. But yeah. Anyway. Richard Tarth says, this is all about them destroying America and people letting them do it by voting Democrat and rhinos. Well, yeah, well, increasingly, it's the same situation that I was talking about with Canada. It's the, it doesn't really matter which way you vote, you end up voting the same way, because increasingly the two parties are united in the same way. And that was one of the best things about Trump, was back in 2016, and I'm clarifying here because I realized that he wasn't the same person in 2020 that he, you know, at least proclaimed to be in 2016, but back in 2016, he was actually willing to say what the American people at least wanted him to say. He was even willing, you know, he was at least willing to give the lip service toward the problems that were taking place with immigration, whereas other political pundits weren't. They were too busy trying to get the so-called Mexican vote, you know, it, referring, of course, actually, in that case, to people who were like second generation and so on. But regardless, they were too busy trying to appease that market or that share of the vote in order to say what, you know, everybody else wanted them to say, in order to actually represent the American people. And then you had Trump who came along and said, well, actually, we've got a real problem here. So in any case, yeah. And, let's see. Okay. All right. Sorry, lost you there. LC said, oh, good to see you tonight. Said, Trump wanted to put Americans first, that's why I like him. Well, he did talk about putting Americans first, and you don't really see many politicians even saying that they want to. And it's always been kind of odd, because you would think that at least say that. But instead, that's actually a divisive statement to say that, you know, put Americans first. I'm not sure how, but in any case, it seems that way. Wayne Bullett says, one thing about Canada, our immigration system is tough, even though it don't seem that way when you live here. I don't think it's that tough, at least not for the right people. There's the amount of refugees that have been left into, that have been led into Canada and given money for so going is less than healthy for the nation, shall we say. There have been a lot of people who've been let in who haven't been appropriately vetted, let's say. So I don't think the immigration system is great. Like, if you look at the immigration system on paper in America, it looks great. Or at least, I shouldn't say it looks great. It looks stern. It looks like it would be very difficult to find a way to become, you know, a citizen, to go through all that mess. But when it comes down to it, someone just kind of travels across the southern border, and then they get treated fine and get to basically live, and then they get kids, and then, you know, there are these different sort of loopholes in the system, and that's what really happens. So it's like, on paper, yeah, it looks like the immigration system is really tough, but in fact there are holes everywhere, and it makes it very difficult for someone to come in a more valid way. And so, yeah, the entire immigration system needs to be reformed, but a few people want to talk about it. LC says, ever wonder why the current administration is refusing Cuban immigrants, because they've seen socialism in action, same with Venezuelans? Well, yeah. And the Biden administration has been really reluctant to be generous with the Cubans. And they've seen the way that the Cubans have voted. You know, like over in Florida, for example, you have a lot of Cuban Americans at this point who reliably vote Republican, and especially so if somebody comes out and actually says that they're more socialistic, or says that they're socialist, like you had with, I can't remember his name, but he was the black guy who got shown up. I think it was Andrew Gillum, I think, who got shown up when he was found naked in a hotel room with a gay man or a gay prostitute. Gillum, yeah, exactly. In that particular case, he'd come out as a socialist and as a far leftist and was pretty comfortable with that fact. Now, he lost in large part because of the Cuban voters that were over there, and the Cubans were like, no, we care about freedom, we don't want socialism, and we know what socialism is. That was, well, pretty instrumental. If you had more Cubans, for example, well, you're going to have more of a net effect spread throughout the area in which they are. And this isn't, you know, particularly surprising, or it shouldn't be. And our politicians know this stuff, and that's why they make the decisions that they do. And it's, you know, it's certainly why you have Democrats who are pushing for more immigration and who are pushing, in many cases, for mass legalization or even for the elimination of essentially a border. In any case, but what bothers me most is the interstate immigration and the way that they vote then. Because it's like, okay, so you got the Cuban, right? And he comes here to Florida and he's like, okay, I don't want socialism, I'm done, I've lived it. I don't want to do that, so I'm going to vote against the socialist candidate. Okay, that makes perfect sense. Now you look at the interstate immigration and you look at the Californian. Right? And so you've got this kind of stereotypical Californian who's like, okay, the taxes are too high, the housing cost is too high, there's this perverse difference where only the most rich people can survive in California and the regular people can't, and I can't deal with all these different encroachments on my freedom, and I can't even reform the way that my kitchen is laid out without getting permission from the government, and it has to go through all these different paperwork, and I don't want to live like this anymore. And I'm tired of having to have the toilet that I can't, you know, flush with enough water. And I can't wash my car because I get, even that's controlled how much water I use. And there's constantly fires because they won't fix the system. And I don't have any freedom because I have these mandates and so on. And then the person decides to leave and move somewhere else. And then he votes for the very same policies. It's like, if it's not actively called socialism, if it's not actively called, you know, a Democrat policy, then they sometimes just don't seem to see it. And they vote for the very same thing that they fled. And that becomes increasingly frustrating. I mean, heck, you would think that the same thing would be the case for countries like Mexico and the policies that have made it as bad as it is. You know, bad enough to leave. It's not me saying that it's bad. It's every immigrant that comes from Mexico that's saying that it's bad, just to be clear here. Because by leaving a country to travel to somewhere else, you are, in an almost explicit way, saying that country is so bad that I have to leave to go somewhere, right? I mean, I don't know why people get so offended when I say this, but it ought to be self-evident that if you left a place, you didn't like the place, and thus, perhaps you shouldn't vote for what you fled. But when you look at, you know, a country like Mexico, you have people who come from there who increasingly, well, I shouldn't say increasingly, but they do, in fact, vote Democrat. Reliably, they vote Democrat. Well, why? Well, because it isn't bad enough. You have to take a country that's as bad as somewhere like Cuba or like Venezuela in order for people to realize, okay, that's so bad, I'm going to think before voting like that. Apparently that's the case. Fortis says Californians cause stress on the states they move to. Yeah, absolutely. California was so bad they had to move to Texas and vote Democrat. Well, yeah, and I know it's not all of them. Like, I do realize that there are like millions of Californians who are stuck there and they want to do better. And they do vote, you know, Republican. It just doesn't do anything because even the Republicans over there in California might as well be called Democrats. I get that. And then they want to leave, but they can't, you know, because leaving such places is a nightmare because you can't sell and so on. I do understand all of that. But when you look at the people who, by and large, have left California and the data on how they vote after they've left, in general, it is still true that those people vote for what they fled, whether they realize it or not. And I do think that immigrants, especially, you know, from other countries and so on, ought to at least reflect on why they had to make the decision that they made. Like, I would never try and make America into England, for example. You know, I would never do that. because quite evidently, England is bad enough that I'm not there, right? I mean, England is bad enough that I wouldn't go back and live, else that's where I'd be. But instead, I look over there and I look at the way that they treat, say, pastors, you know, who preach the Bible, as rare as that is, you know, and the way they arrest them. And I look at the way they arrest people for, you know, posting on Twitter and posting on Facebook, and they arrest people for having the wrong protests and so on. And then they arrest people for defending themselves against attackers. And I can look at that and see what's better here, and see that I don't want America to become England. And so I would think that before you vote, if you are an immigrant, you should at least stop and say, okay, what was wrong that led me to leave, or at least wouldn't permit me to return and be happy? Because otherwise, there will soon be nowhere left to flee. That's absolutely right. Okay, hold on. Okay, a guy on DLive says, half the counties in California voted red. See the current gruesome vote map? It's the cities and urban areas that suck everywhere. Well, yeah, that's like the whole thing with how there are no blue states, only blue cities. That's just sort of the way that it is. When you have densely populated urban areas, call them what you want, that's where you have the sort of pro-Democrat areas, for sure. I mean, that's the case everywhere. It really is. That's sort of an international norm, in fact. Okay. Anyway, let's go ahead and move on a little bit. Project Veritas released another video and they had this economist from the FDA in it called Taylor Lee. And this guy, he doesn't really have any power to institute any of the stuff that he wanted, but he was kind of bloviating about how he fantasizes about herding the unvaccinated people from around the country into Texas so that the rest of the country can then fight the pandemic. And, you know, that's not a bad idea. You know, I kind of almost like, well, if you did do that, honestly, I can't say that I'd be particularly perturbed. Like, you know, it's kind of like the whole thing we were talking about before, when we're like, let's build the wall, but build it around California. It's kind of like the equivocal to that. At some point, you know, you have to kind of separate. It's like, don't shed on me, basically, is what I'm saying. Well, the great replacement is pretty obvious, I think. Anyway. I do agree with some. Okay, you're talking about Project Veritas's videos. The trouble is that, honestly, they do a lot of good work. For those who don't know, Project Veritas goes undercover inside of a variety of different agencies and private companies, and does exposés of what those employees actually think and say behind the scenes, and then they publish it online. The thing is that their editing is so exaggerated at this point that it becomes difficult to really see what's going on. And I see that everywhere. People are complaining that it's over-edited, and it really is, and it's resulted in a situation where you kind of have like looping media, and it's infuriating to watch. And at the same time, it casts doubt on the video itself. And so I do really wish that you had somebody there that was kind of, this is going to sound offensive, but more adult. And, you know, that's basically the issue. It's like they're hurting their own credibility, and their credibility is important. Once you lose your credibility, you can't get it back. And some of the exposés they've done have real value. They do. And it's important when we hear about these, you know, federal workers, for example, who are plotting behind the scenes about what to do about the unvaccinated. It's actually an important issue. Heck, the voter fraud investigations that Project Veritas has done over the years are important, too. In fact, they've led to several arrests around the country. And so that's valuable work. And yet you look at it and you're like, okay, we've got this rap music that's opening up this video, and then you've got the kind of the glitch effect on the video, and it's like they're trying to make it as cool as possible, like it's designed for 15-year-old boys or something. And I'm sorry, but you're detracting away from the most important work that you're doing. And that's a real problem. So I do wish they'd kind of replace the editing crew, honestly. Okay, anyway. All right. So okay, so it looks like you guys basically agree as far as the Project Veritas videos. I know they've released a lot of videos in recent days, but as always, you know, there's like one in five that's particularly interesting. Anyway, Richard Tarth, if we built a conservative nation by putting a wall around red states and only allowing conservatives inside, the free stuff seekers would be climbing the walls because the blue ones would be bankrupt. Well, yeah, and we already have that, just in a more, in a less literal fashion. You have the red states increasingly kind of holding up the blue states, but when you look at the entire country is in debt and no one wants to talk about it, no one wants to think about it. Instead, we're giving massive amounts of money to foreign nations, and there's something really perverse about that at a time when the country is already in debt, because you're talking about when you say the country is in debt, you're talking about the future nations are in debt. And yes, I realize that there's a financial problem with the way that our system currently works, in which you can't really pay off all the debt. I get that. But in any case, if our system is going to be as it is, at no point should you, you know, take out a loan on your children and grandchildren for the sake of some country on the other side of the world. And that's what we see happening. And yes, Italy just told its employers, by the way, to withhold pay from those with no vaccine passport. That's kind of like more what we're talking about. In this case, it's kind of interesting because here in the US, right, you've got people who are being told they're going to lose their jobs, right? They're going to lose their jobs if they don't get the vaccine. But over in Italy, they've taken this other approach, like, no, you're employed, but we're going to hold on to your paycheck and steal your money. Because that's what that is, right? When you hold on to someone's paycheck because they don't show the right woke ID, you're saying we have a right to your money. We're just going to kind of steal it from you. And that's a unique approach, you might say. Kind of evil, you know, but and they're having the employers as the instrumenters of that, which is fascinating because it's like they never have the police do it. And I think there's a real reason for that. I think you'd be much more willing to fight, and by you, I just mean people in general, would be much more willing to fight if you had like police or military being used to enforce one of these mandates. People would look at it and see, I mean, that's tyranny. You know, if you've got somebody who's in the uniform there as an obvious instrument of the state saying you will take this shot, this injection under peril of everything that, you know, you're under peril of. In many cases, it's, you know, an absolute poverty. That's what they're using at the moment. In Australia, they're making camps. So, you know, read into that what you will. But instead they use employers because they know that the employer doesn't look so much like a tyrant. You remember the employer that hired you. You remember the relationship you've had with your employer. Your employer's just a normal person. He's just a normal everyday guy. But the employer has been made into sort of a surrogate tyrant. The employer has been made into the enforcer of the state's will. If he, you know, actually goes ahead and does this, if he goes ahead and acts as that tyrant, yeah, he's the enforcer of the state. And that's the way that it has been throughout a lot of these different tyrannies of the past. I mean, yes, you, of course, had the sort of more obvious instruments, like the police, obviously, you know, are more obvious instruments of the state. But you have neighbor turned against neighbor in every sort of totalitarian nation throughout history. You have people turned against each other because otherwise you can't maintain this sort of environment of fear. You can't keep it up. Instead, you end up having neighbor joining with neighbor against the state, and that's what they want to prevent happening. So instead, to sort of create this disharmony, they use people against others. And that's what we see happening. There we go. Yeah, I think we should probably go ahead and wrap up about now in any case, because I know that we're well after the hour again. I know it passes pretty quickly on Thursday nights, but I do thank you guys for coming up. And if you have any other topics, I'll wait for a few minutes and let you guys kind of get them in. Matthew Lewis says, is this potentially going to turn into a kind of businesses made you do it, yeet capitalism situation a few years down the road? Well, I think you already have that to some degree. At least you have people on the right who are less willing to speak up because they're just saying, well, you know, free market, you know? But it, and I know people get so annoyed with me when I say this, but it really is a sort of fascistic thing that's going on, at least to the degree that Mussolini said that fascism was the merger of state and corporate power. And so you have the state enforcing by getting the corporations to do its bidding in a way that the state itself couldn't have done. Now, that said, you have the Biden administration that has kicked this up a major notch with its recent executive order and bloviating about what it's going to do using the Occupational Safety Health Administration in order to create artificial rules about workplace safety that include getting vaccinated. Now, that's kind of like the federal government acting with its maximal force as opposed to so directly using the corporations. But to some degree, they're still kind of unleashing corporate power where they wouldn't have otherwise been able to. And yeah, I definitely think that you're seeing Republicans at this point who would otherwise have spoken out, who are like, well, you have to let the companies decide what they're doing and make their own rules, even as people lose their freedoms right and left. And at a certain point, you have to say, you know, rights matter, you know, and we don't see that. Do you do these every Thursday? Yes, I do them every Thursday at 10 p.m. Eastern. Do you do collaboration videos? I have done them before, and I plan to do them again. I'm hoping to do... I have a friend, Rob Noor, and another one, Let's Be Frank. They both have channels that I respect and I'm friends with, and I will hopefully be doing shows with them at some point fairly soon. Okay. And, I do... When it comes to live shows, I end up basically putting these on just DLive and YouTube because the options for live shows are somewhat limited. But in any case, I do always upload them afterward to the better, I say better because they let me speak freely, to the better sources like GabTV and Odyssey and BitChute, and also to Rumble, that I won't call it better because it doesn't actually let me speak freely. And that's kind of the whole point of an alt-tech site. Like, what's the point if you're just going to place arbitrary restrictions here and there? But in any case, I upload to all of those places so people can watch wherever they want to watch. I also hope to start getting back to doing sort of the smaller videos that aren't live. In addition, I'm posting those wherever they can be posted. And this is what I basically used to do, which was when I was making videos about whatever topic was sort of on the mind or in the news. And then if it fit within the guidelines of, say, YouTube, then I'd upload it to YouTube. And if not, it would just go on all the other sites. Everything went on the other sites, but you know. In any case, that's the situation. It really gets ridiculous and tiring trying to keep up with ever-moving targets of, you know, what's allowed. No, I don't have an opinion on the different drugs for the virus. If I did, I probably wouldn't speak about them online, but no. Oh, hey, Let's Be Frank, I was just talking about you. Good to see you. All right, and there's his channel if you want to check him out. Okay, and I guess, guys, we are probably done. I think it's been a good night, and I do appreciate you guys joining me. So thank you so much for that. Have a wonderful evening, guys. Bye-bye.